Welcome to today's edition of the Blazing Gray Show with Jason Graves, Mike Janung, and Julie Dozier. Blazing Grace covers important life-affecting issues with grace-filled answers. Here are your hosts, Jason, Mike, and Julie.
Are you struggling with same-gender attractions, or are you the parent of a child or loved one who is? Well, today we're going to talk with Debbie, who is the mom of a young man who's dealing with the same. So welcome to the show, Debbie. How are you?
I am doing well. Thank you for having me here.
Good. It's good to have you. Well, we want to kind of start off with your story. Share with us a little bit about what it's been like for you. Tell the listeners what's happened in your life that's brought you here today.
Well, I would say about 13, 14 years ago, our son, who was then at the age of 14, shared with us that he was struggling with same-sex attractions. Mm-hmm. And we were leaders in our church. I was the executive assistant for a senior pastor, involved in a parachurch Bible study teaching organization for 21 years. And it pretty much rocked our world. Mm-hmm. Although I had known from the time our son was young, we would probably face this issue because I watched or didn't watch my husband's and his relationship develop. It was always troubled. My husband came from an alcoholic background, mm-hmm. and I had my own baggage. And as I like to say, we came with two sets of baggage to the marriage altar, designer baggage, and combined it into a truckload when we got married. And I cannot say that we caused our son's issues, but we contributed to them. And so as a result, we took our son to a number of counselors and just for help. And what I realized is he was going to have to grow some in his own maturity before he could deal with some of the issues. And so our goal was to keep him alive until he was a young adult. And at that time, hopefully, God would begin the process of redemption in his life, and has begun that. And I have not seen that completed, but I know that what God starts, he's going to finish. So if I were to go home today, I would know that God finished it, even though I may never see it.
Wow. Mm. Wow. So it's been a long road, it sounds like. And so what form did that come in terms of help for you? How has that happened?
What it did, and I remember a turning point. When I was on staff at the church, I would get most of the what we would call counseling calls. It wasn't therapy, but any kind of pastoral call. And a woman called me one day, and she was beside herself because she found out that her son was in was struggling with the same gender issues, and just started telling me everything that was wrong with him. And I could hear in her story, there was some grave dysfunction in her. And I found coming out of my mouth the words, I think it would be more helpful for you to deal with your baggage than focus on your son's. I think once you're more healed, you can offer your health to him rather than thinking that he's the problem. Mm-hmm. And it was as if I was speaking to myself. At that point, I knew God was telling me, Debbie, it's time to look at your baggage as well. And so it began a journey for me of examining how I may have contributed to it. And truly, God went very, very deep in my own heart to examine things that I had never looked at before in terms of my own brokenness, identity issues, my own baggage, which I brought to the marriage as well and my family.
Debbie, how much longer after you found out about that struggle was that phone call?
Oh, it had to been about, I'm just guessing, about maybe 8 years, probably.
So during those 8 years, were you kind of spinning your wheels during that time, or what was going on during that time initially?
I remember a quote that it was so amazing as I look back how God provided for us, because I remember thinking there is no roadmap for this. I can't open to Bible verses and tell me how to get from A to B. But he would bring quotes or books or people at just the right time. And I remember hearing a quote shortly after our son told us that he was struggling. And an interviewer had asked Billy Graham and asked him, if you found out your son was struggling with homosexuality, what would be your response? And Billy Graham answered him after a pause and said, well, I think I'd just have to love him all the more. Mm-hmm. And that became my goal during those years before I began looking at my own baggage, was to love him and to let him know he was accepted. It mm-hmm. didn't change anything about him, and that we would stand with him no matter what it took. Mm-hmm. And so that's for those first 8 years. That's all we could do, because he was finishing his high school and his finishing up his college years, too.
Mm-hmm. Right. And do you think that maybe that was in God's timing, as far as that's what he needed during that time, and that phone call came just when it was time to do the next step?
Absolutely. I can see, I call it God's fingerprints on that whole journey at just the right time there. I believe God is never late, although he's never on my timetable. I don't think he's ever late. And at just the right time, he would always bring the next step. And that phone call opened up that season for my journey.
Mm-hmm.
When I was able, I remember hearing Si Rogers once speak about his own journey and how after 10 years of being on the leader of Exodus, God said, Si, we're going to go deep now. And Si struggled with that and said, why at this point are you taking me when I'm the director of Exodus International? And God seemed to say to Si, you weren't strong enough to face what you have to face now. Yeah. And I remember thinking, that's probably the case for me. I wasn't strong enough to face what I was going to have to face about my own self, about my own brokenness. And it just wasn't God's time until that point.
And I think that can be applied to just everybody's life. And mm-hmm. whatever kind of crisis they're going through is just trusting that God knows the next step and mm-hmm. the timing and what you're ready for and what you're not.
Right. I had to come to the end of myself of trying to figure out how to fix this. Mm-hmm. That was probably that first season, as I couldn't fix my son. I couldn't fix the situation. I couldn't fix my family. I couldn't fix my husband. And I really couldn't fix myself. And that took time to relinquish all of that and say, okay, God, it's up to you. But as any parent who finds their child struggling, you try everything you possibly can mm-hmm. to mm-hmm. fix it. Mm-hmm. And God never called me to fix anything. He mm-hmm. called me to trust him.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I had to get to, was just what I call gut fight faith or gut trust in God, where mm-hmm. it's just me and him.
Mm-hmm. Now, earlier you were talking about your baggage, and I love the analogy of, okay, we brought these designer bags, right, to the marriage. And so what can you say about that in terms of your journey and what baggage you've carried along the way, metaphorically speaking, that maybe some of our listeners can relate to out there?
I would have to say, and this is in no, I grew up in a wonderful family, but I realized how sometimes, even as young children, we will believe lies.
Mm.
And I remember in Si Rogers' testimony how he believed the lie early in his childhood about some of the things that happened to him and his family. I grew up on the East Coast, and my mom's Italian, and she came over with my dad after the conclusion of World War II. They were married over in Africa, where he was stationed, and we grew up in a good family. During that time, my mother's mother came over from Africa, which is where she was living, to live with my parents because she was dying of cancer. And my mom is an only child. Her dad was missing in action in the Sahara. They found his watch in his Jeep during the Second World War. And so that was her only family she had, and she was coming over to watch her mom die. And she asked my dad, what can we do to help my mother? And so my dad said, well, let's have another child. And I was that child. Mm. Well, I didn't realize this until later. My grandmother died when I was 2, which meant I lost that presence in my life, mm-hmm. her love and her presence in my life. Also, what that did is ushered my mom into a season of grief. And I know what grief does.
Mm-hmm.
You shut down. And so in the blink of an eye, I lost 2 significant pieces of mm-hmm. people in my life. Mm-hmm. As a 2-year-old or 3-year-old, Malcolm Smith said, children can't edit.
Mm-hmm.
They can only interpret what happens to them. So I interpreted that. I couldn't edit that something was wrong with me.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I was not lovable, or else they would have not stopped loving me. They never stopped loving me. They just had to, my mom had her own grief to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
That set me up in a lifelong process of achieving love, working for love, mm-hmm. of gaining approval, of thinking I am deficient, something's wrong with me.
Mm-hmm.
I think all people are born with a measure of shame, mm-hmm. but then I think life circumstances can reinforce that and interpret that.
Mm-hmm.
And so my own shame that I was born with, because I'm a sinful, fallen human being, added to that circumstance in my life, I just had tons of shame and blame, self-loathing. But in order to overcome that, I call it my little time warp continuum. I began to be the performer. I didn't like the way I felt about myself, so to make myself feel good, I performed hard and I performed well, and I always excelled. I was comfortable at the head of the pack, and so I always sought. So to look at me, people would not see me as somebody who struggled with shame and blame and self-loathing, because any time I got there, I worked harder.
Yeah.
It's like it was this little time, time-space continuum. I just caught in this warp, time warp.
My wife calls that overt perfectionism.
That's it.
She says, you're a perfectionist too. I said, what are you talking about? I can't even make the bed. And she says, well, you know, I'm an overt perfectionist, like you just described yourself, Debbie. You're a covert perfectionist. And I said, what's that? You know, like, sounds like a secret agent kind of stuff, right? Covert perfectionist, right? But, you know, she said, no, it's like where you have heard 1,000 times in your life, do it right the first time or don't do it at all.
Yes.
So if you see something that you look at and you want to do, but you don't see yourself doing it perfectly, enjoying it, or getting it done all in one fell swoop, then you don't even want to try.
Yes.
And boy, that really fit for me. So perfectionism can come up. I think it's just a sort of a manifestation of the shame.
Yes.
You were talking about grief, how it landed on you. And I'm just curious if you could talk about your grief as it pertained to losing the ideal in terms of the situation with your son. We don't sign up for this kind of a thing, right? And we don't imagine it when they're born that they're going to deal with these kinds of struggles. So what's that grieving process been like for you?
Well, that was the one of the difficulties early on. It launched me, at least, into an immediate grief cycle, process that I did not recognize. I did not realize I was grieving. Those around me, those on the church staff, did not realize I was grieving. One, because they didn't know about our son yet. Some of them did. So I had to hide my grief because I couldn't explain why I was crying all the time. So it was a very isolated grief process for me. And I eventually came to understand, I'm grieving. I'm not falling apart. I am grieving, and I grieved our past, because what I thought it really wasn't. I grieved our present, because now our son has, in one sense, a significant hurdle to overcome, which directs the entire course of his life. He has always wanted a family, and I grieve for not being able to have children that I know he wanted. I grieved for his future. I grieved for our future of not being grandparents of his children, probably, unless God intervenes. I'm not saying God can't, but I just don't know that he will. I believe he can. I just can't say that I know that he will. So I grieved past, present, and future, and it's an ongoing grief. Every time somebody's child gets married, I rejoice with that, but that also means it's a fresh reminder my child is not. Every time a friend, you know, has a child, I rejoice with him, but it ushers. My mom once said, my dad died a year ago. My mom said in the interim, she said, nothing will ever be completely happy again. And so while I can rejoice fully with people, underneath there's always a measure of sorrow, a measure of grieving, a measure of sadness for what life could have been, what the ideal could have been.
Right, right.
Yeah. But in the midst of that is the presence of God.
Right.
Truly. Henry Nouwen wrote that in our poverty we find the Christ. And it's in those moments of poverty that his presence and his reality are the greatest and the most precious. So we're not alone in this journey by any stretch.
Wow. Well, if you're just tuning in, we're visiting with Debbie, who's a mom of a young man who's dealt with same-gender attractions, and she's sharing her story, and so we're very grateful to have her. But look, if you're needing some help yourself, Julie Dozier and I both do counseling over the telephone, and we'd love to help you. Just listen at the end of the show for our phone numbers there. But also, Julie, you're having a couples intensive. Tell us a little bit about what folks would expect if they're, you know, needing some help and coming out here to beautiful Colorado to get it from you.
Well, we're going to have it in a retreat setting, and we have couples, and it's going to be, there will be groups, which is really powerful when you're struggling with some things in your marriage, and there will be one-on-one with a therapist, myself and someone else, and then there'll be teaching time and and just a wonderful time of healing.
Great. And that's September 20th through the 23rd. So for more information, just listen for our phone numbers at the end of the show. And of course, if you want to come to an Everyman's Battle intensive workshop weekend, they're coming up here. I'll be in Sacramento in September, the weekend of the 7th through the 9th. So that's coming up pretty quick. And then Santa Ana, California, Orange County there in October, and that's the weekend of the 5th through the 7th. So, again, give us a call if you want more information about that. But, Debbie, I'm really curious about your story. You were heavily involved in the church, yet it didn't seem like there was really a lot of support in your immediate surroundings. Talk about what that was like and why you think that was. Why wasn't it a safe enough place for you to get the help you needed?
I think churches are changing. This was in 1993, so it's been quite some time. I just don't think the church, I think for the first time, at least in our church, we began to understand it's not an issue that's out there.
Right.
It's in here.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember having conversations with our pastor and saying, I now understand, because listening to the preaching from most evangelical pulpits, of what was being said about homosexuality and the words anathema and abomination being tied in the same sentence, even if referring to the sin, you have these young men and women who are struggling in the church. The message that's subtly received is not one of acceptance.
Right.
I agree that there is a sin of homosexuality, but as a young child who, even at 8, 9, or 10, who knows that they're different, something's different about them, hear these the messages and the words attached with just that come oftentimes with that with the issue, they grow up thinking, I have no place to go.
Right.
This is not a safe place. I am the abomination. I am the anathema. I am everything that is being said about the sin of homosexuality. Many times our children, we identify with the sin and make that our identity and not something we struggle with.
Yeah.
So that was all in that. So it was not a safe place because the church's viewpoint. And at that same time, almost the same time, was the death of Matthew Shepard. And I don't know if you remember that horrendous ordeal and the pastor coming out from Kansas at his funeral and with the signs that said, God hates fags.
Yeah.
That was in that whole time when Marcin let us know. And
And by the way, you know, that guy just does not represent God.
No,
okay, so
truly not.
I wouldn't even refer to him as a pastor and give him that dignity. I mean, that guy has got some serious problems. And boy, what a divisive figure in this culture around this issue. And oh boy, I feel sorry for that guy when he meets his maker. I think we need to pray for that Westboro church in Kansas, and whatever's gotten into them, whatever's happened to that, I can think his name's Fred, whatever happened is in his life and his past to scar him this way, we need to pray for him. But go on.
Yeah, but having seen that and not being, again, children not being able to edit very well, that gets lopped into everything. So there was such a measure of self-loathing of that I struggle with this issue, or that my son struggled with this issue. So there was really no answer. And so we are blessed and fortunate enough to have a ministry in Denver, and we contacted them and met with the executive director and two of their staff members who have just been walked the journey with us. They agreed that Joel was too young to attend the meetings at the age of 14. Mm-hmm. And so they began meeting with him privately, two on two. They would always have two guys there, two guys that had struggled with the issue themselves, and to this day still have a voice in his life and have stuck with him. So in one sense, God used those two young men to keep him alive until he was old enough to begin to deal with this as an adult.
You wouldn't be talking about Scotty and Roger, would you?
I sure would.
Scotty and Roger at WGA in Denver, two of my favorite people on the earth. And boy, talk about heroes in terms of helping people. They are incredible blessings. In fact, if you're listening in the Denver area and you need help, Where Grace Abounds, WGA, is a fantastic ministry. Highly recommend recommend you get involved. And they got a lot of great options there in terms of programs, mm-hmm. and so you've been helped by them. They're wonderful people, Debbie, and it sounds like they continue to have a presence today.
Yes, very much so.
Fantastic.
You know, Debbie, you mentioned something about just the church and how that you did feel like something was missing there. Through the process that you've walked through, are there some things that you would suggest that churches do, or how that sermons could be worded so that they're bringing healing instead of harm to a person that's already feeling alienated and just with shame already?
I think the biggest thing, and this is what I've had numerous conversations about, is realize it's an issue that's in the church. It's not
mm-hmm.
out there. It's,
oh, yeah.
it's not just on Capitol Hill. That there are young men and women now
mm-hmm.
struggling with this issue and are too afraid or don't understand. And to begin to examine our own viewpoints about the
right.
issue and
right.
be honest about that. And if it needs to change, then bring that to the Lord and ask mm-hmm. him to change that. Set a climate within the church itself that I remember my son saying once, you know, if I stood up on a Sunday evening service and confessed that I struggle with pornography, I'd probably have 40 men come
mm-hmm.
wrap their arms around me and pray for me.
Mm-hmm.
If I stood up and said I struggle with homosexuality, maybe one person might come, and they're not even sure they should touch me.
Yeah.
And so it's setting a climate from the top down
right.
of acceptance of humanity, and while at the same time not going soft on the sin.
Right.
And letting people know God is a God that redeems. The verses that I remember Cy speaking so powerfully and have become part of my life is Isaiah 61, the first passage that Jesus preached in Capernaum. He came to set the captives free,
mm-hmm.
and that God has a plan in this. And I don't know what each individual's person's healing is going to look like,
mm-hmm.
but my goal is not their healing, but getting them connected to the healer.
Right.
Because they can get healed and still not know the healer.
Mm-hmm. Now, speaking of climate, you described a climate that can be a real roadblock. And the roadblocks that I've seen, because you know I specialize in helping people with same-gender attraction, so I do get a lot of parents like yourself calling saying, what about help for us? But when it comes to saying, hey, why don't you kind of look at your own issues, it rarely seems to happen. I mean, you really are a rarity. So with just, you know, 30, 45 seconds here, what are some of the roadblocks that you've seen in other parents who are struggling this way from getting their own help?
I think the biggest thing is thinking it's their problem, the
right.
child's problem.
So guilt.
Guilt.
False
yeah.
guilt.
False guilt.
Right.
Lack of honesty,
mm-hmm.
transparency,
mm-hmm.
Not understanding that that in God's sight, he's big enough to handle this, and that
mm-hmm.
God is the answer, and that what we really need is to examine our own level of healing. I realized I only passed on what I was.
Right.
If I'm not healthy, I can only pass on my death.
You can't
health.
Give what you don't have, right?
Right.
Right. Amen. Mm-hmm. Well, Debbie, thank you so much. We're looking forward to having you back next week. So everybody please tune in, and we'll hear more of Debbie's story, including where she is today, and love to hear other scriptures maybe that have comforted you, Debbie, and including you know, how you're advising people that you may come in contact with these days. So, but Julie, you know, we've done shows on just about everything here at the Blazing Grace Show, and we need ideas. So listen, if you're listening on your computer right now, what I want you to do is go to your Outlook or to your email. Don't worry, you know, the show will keep playing. And send us an email with any ideas of shows that you want to hear. We would love to hear from you. You can email mike@blazinggrace.org, or you can email me at help@healingforthesoul.org. And Julie, why don't you give me your email?
Or Julie@wingsofgrace.org.
That's wings plural, because you have to fly with two wings, right? You can't fly with one.
I did
right?
not say wings.
Right. So please give us your ideas. Also, we are listener supported, so to keep us on the air here through podcasting, and then of course on the airwaves in South Africa, of all places, we need your financial help. And so we would love to hear from you that way as well. Maybe you would like to become a regular sponsor of the Blazing Grace Show. So go to blazinggrace.org and click on the donate link to find out more information about how to do that. But keep us in prayer. So tune in next week when we'll have Debbie back with us. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for tuning in to this edition of the Blazing Grace Show. We trust today's broadcast helps bring you closer to God and to what God desires for your life. Blazing Grace is a listener-supported mission intended to help listeners around the world. Your support is vital in keeping that mission alive. We ask you to prayerfully consider sending a tax-deductible gift to Blazing Grace. It will be gratefully appreciated. Send your monetary gift to Blazing Grace, P.O. Box 62521, Colorado Springs, Colorado 80962-2521. That's Blazing Grace, P.O. Box 62521, Colorado Springs, Colorado, 80962-2521. Want to learn more about Blazing Grace? Find us on the internet at www.blazinggrace.org. That's BLAZINGGRACE.org /radio.htm. On that page, you'll find a downloadable copy of this show, or you can visit oneplace.com under Ministries. Look for Blazing Grace Radio. If you want help resolving a sexual addiction, you can reach Jason Graves by dialing toll-free 877-590-SOUL. That's 877-590-7685. Julie Dozier can be reached at 719-266-6636. That's 719-266-6636. Get a copy of Mike's book, The Road to Grace, by visiting roadtograce.com. That's the word to and not the number. Desire for a specific subject to be covered on the show? Email Mike Janung at mike@blazinggrace.org. We look forward to sharing more blazing issues and grace-filled answers with you next time. Thank you so very much for listening. Tell a friend about the broadcast. On behalf of Jason, Mike, and Julie, may God richly shine His grace upon you. I am free.